Good evening and welcome, dear friends. So good to see your faces, to know that we're here together, to take our place, to rest at a center of great intention, to listen deeply, to engage, to feed, and to be fed. May our work be food for lifting the consciousness of the world. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and in the name of the Holy Spirit. Amen. So once again, we wonder about what it is to understand and embody a resurrected life during this time of Easter. What does it look like? Well, for us now, we continue our exploration of three-centered being. And for our opening reflection, we're going to turn to Burl Pogson, who was a student of Maurice Nichols for 19 years and his secretary for 14. She was one of a small group of people that lived with the Nichols and moved through all of their transitions during the war. She was a beloved member and was especially empowered by her to continue his work after his death. And she did so for another 13 years after Maurice Nichols died. In the last 10 years of her life, she had as many as 6 weekly work groups that she was facilitating in several parts of England. So she was a woman that never retired, like the Nichols themselves, who never retired. A wise woman, if you will. So let us listen to what she has to say about this work that we are attempting to embody ourselves and to continue the lineage. This teaching was originally called Fragments of an Unknown Teaching. And it is presented in fragmentary form. Certain ideas are given so that you may use them, even if you have been studying the system for 30 years, yet it is ever new, because there are such depths of meaning. These fragments are ancient truths, which have been handed down orally from the beginning and have been preserved in schools. What we speak about is very ancient teaching. It is the teaching behind all of the great religions. The source is always the same. But when it becomes exoteric, that is external, with rules and outward forms, it falls into multiplicity and gets further away from the source. Thus, it is purposely given in the form of fragments, so that we have to ever assemble these fragments into our own understanding. So may it be so that we digest these ideas, and as we go forth, we're integrating the ideas of science and our times into these fragments. And we're doing so for the sake of understanding and being development, hopefully. So aware now that our being bodies are here and that we do encompass realms, both visible and invisible. Realms of possibility, the heights and the depths, the widths and the lengths. We gather ourselves. We gather our being to be present here, embodied now. Each of us is at this particular place and time for a particular reason. We are here as persons and as a collective. And so what we do, what we emanate, matters a great deal for one another and possibly for the world. Thus, we place ourselves in a place of imminent trust and receptivity to the influences that are streaming forth from the conscious circle of humanity. In harmony with other beings who wish to be conscious on this planet, we receive these ideas with great valuation, with back upright, still and contained, residing in our own atmosphere, not entangled in the world without. We scan our bodies, particularly being aware of the small muscles of the face. We let go of all tension and constriction. We breathe in deeply all every most part of our being, all being, everything. Everything that passed through us this day, through our world today, everything that hurt, that confused, that created fear, that left us feeling powerless, less than, more than, everything. Everything that uplifted, that loved, that brought joy and hope. All affirming, all denying, and we hold it as offering, reconciled, as food for being. We lift it all and ask that it be transubstantiated in our being as whole, as lovely, as radiant, as beloved of God. We do this on behalf of everyone and everything. And we breathe out this healing light into the world, all worlds. In this breathing, we sense that all is flowing, becoming, in every particle of this universe, and in our own being as microcosm. I hand over complexities. I hand over plans. I hand over anxieties and the small fears of my heart. I yield to the divine human life. I am. I wish. I can work. I stand unencumbered before God and one another. And we enter into the prayer of Lectio Divina and listen for what comes to us, speaks to us of our journey. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called children of God. Throughout the universe, on every plane, three forces are at work. They are the creative forces. Nothing is produced without the conjunction of these three forces. Every manifestation, every creation, results from the meeting together of the three forces. And thus, conflict or friction is vital and valuable, though sometimes uncomfortable. No wish, no second force. With wish, second force. Now, what useful third force will come to our aid for the sake of the highest manifestation? What will speak peace to the confluence of first and second forces? What will truly be wholly reconciling? In peace, we request the highest good and most conscious expression of third force possible for us and for our others. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called children of God. Throughout the universe, on every plane, three forces are at work. They are the creative forces. Nothing is produced without the conjunction of these three forces. Every manifestation, every creation, results from the meeting together of the three forces. And thus, conflict or friction is vital and valuable, though sometimes uncomfortable. No wish, no second force. With wish, second force. Now, what useful third force will come to our aid for the sake of the highest manifestation? What will speak peace to the confluence of first and second forces? What will truly be the holy reconciling? In peace, we request the highest good and most conscious expression of third force possible for us and for others. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called children of God. Throughout the universe, on every plane, three forces are at work. They are the creative forces. Nothing is produced without the conjunction of these three forces. Every manifestation, every creation, results from the meeting together of the three forces. And thus conflict or friction is vital and valuable, though sometimes uncomfortable. No wish, no second force. With wish, second force. Now, what useful third force will come to our aid for the sake of the highest manifestation? What will speak peace to the confluence of first and second forces? What will truly be the holy reconciling? In peace, we request the highest good and most conscious expression of third force possible for us and for others. And so be it. I invite you to share with us what you received from this passage. Steve, welcome and good evening.
Good evening, Marianne. You know, I think that we practice first force in our lives all the time. We're always, especially a one, we're initiating things and we're project oriented and detail oriented. And we pride ourselves in being able to calculate second force sufficiently to make sure that it's minimized so that we cut through and accomplish our goal. But what I found in my experience is just in community work here in Wimberley is it's very easy to intimidate second force into submission. Mm-hmm. And second force becomes passive aggressive. And then it achieves the same aim. It just drags along, but things don't get done. And so the first force power and control programs freak out and have a tantrum, and then you back out. I think the key thing about first force, second force is it empowers discernment in first force. It helps us figure out what we deliberate on a wish, and then we act on it. And then, but we externally consider all those involved, those that we are helping, so that we're not like helping through abusing and not insert our agenda into the situation. So it's a learning curve. And I think we evolve if we are open to that vulnerability. The first force never really manifests because there's always a yielding. There's a refinement and a yielding. And that is a better creation because it's a wiser creation. We keep stacking those creations one on top of the other. And if we just don't get too frustrated with our negative eyes that show up when we're thwarted and frustrated, we can grow from that.
It sounds like you're bringing in work principles to mediate. So thank you, Steve. Thank you. Alan.
I heard the words conflict or friction is vital and valuable. And experientially and intellectually, I think I understand that most completely, if only emotional center would learn it or understand it.
Amen, Alan.
Yeah, amen. Amen.
Thank you. Thank you. Don or Miss Deborah or both?
Hi, Marianne.
Hello, Don.
The image spoke to my heart, and I saw in that image the symbolized expression of that entire reading and the answer to the questions in that next to last paragraph. And to me, I saw the hand poised between third force blind and third force of the work, or worlds 24 and worlds 48. And it looked like it could be turning the page, or the veil, maybe pulling the veil to expose 24, or it could be the veil closing on 24 and bringing down 48, which goes to Sadhguru's talk in that video. You know, if we are aware that we don't want to be angry, then we're not going to be angry. We won't poison ourselves. And so that way we'll self-remember. Self-remembering seems to me to be the answer to those questions. How do we bring peace? How do we stay gentle? And so when we're at peace in world 24, let's say we're in 24, second force to that will be to bring down 48 and to not remember ourselves or to get identified. And this hand is the work, it seems to me, or the opportunity to remember the work. And I've never really seen it that way, but it's that drawing, that image really, really spoke to me, the light and the dark. And there's no good or bad. It's just which one do you prefer? And there's a choice there, and you can make it. It seems to me that it's beautiful.
That's beautiful, Don. That's perfect physio divina reflection. Mm-hmm. Surely it is the light of God. Thank you.
Thank you.
Tamara. Good evening.
Hello, Marianne. So when I was listening to this, it made me think of Rosenberg and the video, and actually nonviolent communication.
Yes.
And it made me think of Blessed Are the Peacemakers. And I just loved what he did in his life, trying to help bring peace to different nations. And, you know, his way of being conscious in communicating with and helping these different nations to resolve their differences through conscious communication. I just found that was a beautiful lesson to learn about the work that he's done.
Yes.
Thank
you, Tamara. So his work is so simple and so beautiful, though. So simple sounding. Michael, welcome.
The last part of the reading was a series of questions.
Yes.
What's useful third force that's come to our aid? What will speak peace to the confluence? What will truly be holy reconciling? And then at the end, there was this statement, and I realized this was either very clever or it was just the hand of God, that the answer was buried in the next question. And that is, it says, in peace, we request the highest good, ... And that practice or that orientation by itself, wanting the highest good, that's different than wanting this or wanting that.
Yes. It is.
And it is, there is a disposition of surrender to the will of God, and to surrender in humility to what I don't know, that orients itself toward accepting whatever the highest good is in any situation, that's a powerful third force.
Indeed it is. Thank you, Michael. If I remember correctly, you had that aim last week to be third force.
How about that?
How about that? Thank you. Thank you. And Kathy, you will be our last sharing. Welcome. There you go.
What kind of resonated with me about this passage is the similarity, seeming similarity in these words of, if you have the wish, that's related to first force, as I'm learning. Yes. And setting out an intention might be another way to describe that.
Yes.
And then second force would, to me, feel like another word for it might be resistance, mm-hmm. or pushing against.
Yes.
And the question that comes up in my mind is, I wonder how the universe handles thought that we might consider negative. Because to me, that would be, as I've been studying previously, contrast. So you see, you're out in your world, you see something that you don't like, you don't want, someone's ill, you don't, rather than dwelling on that contrast that you see and the negative about it.
Yes.
I'm just wondering if the contrast then provides us the wish of what we do want.
Yes.
So the more you dwell on the negative, how does the universe interpret that? Well, maybe as a wish, because that's what we think about.
Yes.
I'm pondering these things.
Yes, wondering. Yes, these questions are good. Thank you, Kathy. Thank you for sharing that with us. What a blessed thing it is to share and to hear one another in this way, actually, in our wandering, in our certainty, and in our uncertainty. It's all good because we all have these questions ourselves. So thank you to each of you. What a joy it is to receive among all of us. So now I am very joyful to welcome again Peter, who will lead us into three-centered communication, conflict, and resolution. So Peter, welcome this evening.
Thank you, Marianne, and thank you everyone for your presence and participation tonight. This is very meaningful reflections by our friends. Thank you for setting up the evening in that way and opening the door for further reflection on the homework from last week. We are in the section on relating body, so body relating with the world by way of focusing on very specific human experiences. We started out with Mimi reflecting on three-centered love. Then we did three-centered communication last week. Tonight we'll do three-centered conflict and conflict resolution. And next week we'll do another three-centered experience. So just to recognize how very powerful and practical the work idea of the law of three is, as well as the three centers, in terms of how we relate to ourselves and one another and our experience with the world. I'm going to share my screen and just bring up last week's homework. I know many of you have already shared some of your experiences of this homework in the journey groups, but I really encourage you to share tonight and that we have robust sharing, especially new shares from people who here in the community, but either their video is off or just have found it not a good place to share. I really encourage new sharing to keep the community hearing your voice and growing together and knowing one another. I'm looking for this share button, and there it is. Okay, so just as a reminder to everyone, and then we'll open up the floor for sharing your experience of the homework. There's two aspects of it, and actually the invitation to watch that Sadhguru video also was a third. But the two I'm inviting you to share tonight is choose a past conflict that began with a communication breakdown or a miscommunication. Review your role in this miscommunication or conflict. Notice which centers were involved and study yourself. Obviously, this is doing work in reverse or going back in time and working in our time body, remembering an experience. I'm curious what you came up with. Also, the invitation to observe how you communicate over the course of multiple conversations with the same person or different people. Notice your patterns of communication and what way are you the common denominator and outcomes of conversations. So a lot of different ways to go with those, both of those homework invitations. And I'm wondering who would like to share. Just go ahead and raise your hand and we'll go from there. Who would like to begin our sharing in the homework tonight? Martin, please.
This week I learned a lot about what is less is more and more is less. The situation where more is less is where I was communicating out of one single center, emotional center, and it creates a lot of problems. It just happened to have come up this week, very timely. And in the case of where less is more is when I'm able to actually, and this takes a little work for me, some concentration to get into my body. And there's certainly a lot of, I'm sure everyone has their own way of doing that. This idea of feeling into sensation. I went to volume 6, just trying to research into sensation. It's interesting that the commentaries, there's only 3 references to that, you know, right after self, which has about 3 pages. And it was interesting, but it talks about how to not identify with sensation, and identifying with sensation is not really doing the work. But for me, and just sort of just feeling the contents of my body and just feeling the space that I'm occupying and forcing into that is one way for me to get into body. And that is actually becoming more present, and being more present, the intellectual center is unable to really, and emotional, the outer edges of that are unable to really just activate. And so in that sense, less is more in the communication. So staying centered for me on the three centers, I tend to talk less. I think that's okay.
Well, thank you for sharing. So yeah, I hear what you're saying. So the less is more thing is a conscious choice for you. Are you saying that your normal kind of mode of communication is perhaps more words with less consciousness?
Well, I would like to think I'm awake during that time, but yes, I would say so for mm-hmm. sure. And so if I'm saying something, I mean, it's going to be mechanical. So it's programs.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a pretty common observation. Thank you for shedding light on that. It's funny because men sometimes get stereotyped as not having, you know, saying of not communicating, and you know, grunting or whatever. But you know, so less is more when it's conscious. And what would you say your normal kind of set, your most comfortable center is when you communicate?
Or comfortable would be my most asleep, which would be intellectual. For sure. Let it go. Figure it all out. Get from point A to B. You know, just keep on talking.
So that would include what? Like opinions, stories? What other, what types of things?
I go back to those, my programs, it's going to be probably more around affection. And I'm the smartest guy in the room or something like that, you know?
Yeah. Wanting to be liked type thing.
Yeah. Showing off. Just, yeah. And, with the work, it's nice to be able to sort of sit back and non-critically observe that. Yeah. It's really pretty hilarious.
Well, courageous you. Thank you, Martin, for going first and for sharing honestly like this. I think it's a pretty normal human experience for all of us when it comes to communicating. Thank you.
Amen.
Who else would like to share tonight? This is very close to home, so, and it's certainly one of the more practical applications of the work that I've come across. How are we communicating? It's quite universal, so I'm confident we are not at a lack of examples. Pam, please.
Oh, that works. Good evening. So the communication I'm going to report on has a couple of factors. So it's with my son, who's an adult and has his own child. So that's the age bracket. And of course, in time body work with my son, I can see going back before the work and hit when he was a teenager. And, it's the typical parent thing. I have the honor to get to babysit my granddaughter twice a week with him. And he is a stay-at-home dad. And so he's alone with the baby at home most of the time. Very rarely, I'm usually playing with the baby while he's doing schoolwork, but very rarely. This was just yesterday was one of those days where he had some time when she went down for a nap before I had to leave. And he starts to, with great fervor, tell me about his class research paper. Well, I'm fascinated in 100 ways inside. And I'm listening in all three centers. I'm on purpose because of the homework. I'm listening. I've got my ears are tuned. And all of a sudden, I am awakened by him saying, stop interrupting twice. And it jolted me awake because I was in some sort of dream world and I had gotten identified with an eye that was trying to speak while he was speaking, evidently. And this is a pet peeve that I have with other significant people that they always interrupt me, blah, blah, blah. So it was beautiful. And here's the most wonderful thing about the work to me about this. It doesn't happen often, so this is not a typical experience, but when he said that, that shock didn't land on the eye. It landed in the intertidal zone of neutrality in me, and all it did was wake me up to the fact that I was identified and I completely asleep. And it was such a shock, but it was a very neutral feeling, no embarrassment or, none of the recrimination or anything. That's 24 dipping down into, 48. And I'm getting to see that intertidal zone that's available because of the work. That's something I can see. We call it a miracle, and it was, but that's what that looks like. 24 and 48. That's a miracle. That looks like a miracle to me. So I got to see that and I reflected on it and got to have a moment where I looked back in time and there was such a huge difference in the being of this mother, of this woman. I have changed so much and it's affected everything, everyone. It's beautiful and I thank this community.
Well, thank you for your work and contributing to the healing of the world little by little. So that's a beautiful, very insightful, clear description of an event that you did work on. I appreciate that very much, Pam. So you had no idea you were interrupting?
No, that was the weirdest thing. Because, you know, we're used to being able to be identified and observing it. I mean, I'm used to doing that. I can see it running, you know, the personality. I was so into the subject matter of what he was, I was really interested in it. It must have made an association, is the only thing I can think of, is that there was some bright idea that, you know, associatively, that I then got excited, because, you know, I can get excited. And I must have been over there in this eye and being identified and, you know, jumping at the chance, waiting, and he was tuned.
Well, that's what I was wondering, is perhaps a different center was interrupting and you didn't know it. Like, for example, the nonverbal gestures that we do, or even our facial expressions can sound like, you know, even guttural kinds of, you know, that type of, it's not the intellectual center, it's not the emotional center, it's the body.
It's the body, it's the moving center. I think that is exactly what was going on. Because, you know, I can kind of get that little, you know, kind of excited. Yeah, and he just read it as interrupting, yes. Which it was, psychically interrupting him, even if it wasn't verbal.
Yeah, so many people have experienced, you know, you're talking to your beloved or spouse or kid or whatever, and the television's on, and yeah, you're looking over here, you know, so.
Yeah.
A different type of physical movement.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you.
Thanks, Peter. For sharing.
Yeah, beautiful. Tamara, please.
I had a similar experience to Pam. I was at a graduation, our daughter's graduation, and I was sitting next to my son and I kept looking over at him like, isn't that cool? Isn't that cool? Every time anybody said anything. And finally he said to me, Mom, would you stop looking at me, please? And normally I would say to myself, oh my gosh, I'm so offended that he said that. But yeah, it was great because it was such a great work opportunity and I caught it and I wasn't identified and, you know, it doesn't happen that often, but it was a beautiful moment because I was like externally considered him and he was being honest with me, you know, and it wasn't, you know, I didn't need to be identified with it. So anyways, that was just kind of a beautiful moment.
What did you say or do?
I every time anything happened, I kept looking at my son going, wasn't that cool? Wasn't that cool? And I think he was trying to experience it. And I was just kind of like Pam, just kept jumping in and like interrupting, like, oh, I need to tell you how cool this is or something. what I did was afterwards, I just kind of said, oh, okay. And I just sat there for a second with it. And I thought, you know, that's fine. It's totally fine. But, you know, normally I would be like, oh, how rude.
Yeah. I mean, that's good work. Or, you know, the other thing that happens oftentimes is people become passive aggressive. Oh, you know, you don't want me here, right?
Yeah.
Type of thing.
Yeah, externally considering and, you know, if I truly understood, I wouldn't disagree. You know, a lot of things come up and it's just, you know, also just to be self-remembering, like, you know, what a lovely human being I'm sitting next to. I don't need to make a big deal about it.
Yeah, well, good work. You were awake in that interaction. That would have been one that snags a lot of people taking it personally, how our children treat us. Thank you. Good work. Thank you. We'll go with Joe, please.
Hey, brother. I've been really frustrated because I can't really understand my 2-year-old, and I've been trying to externally consider her, and I've been learning to will it, and to laugh at the frustration and just to say, is that all you got? And it's helping me come into the moment, but also ask myself, what are they trying to offer me at this moment? And when I point the finger the other way, I ask myself, what am I trying to offer them? Am I trying to offer them fear, like my father and mother did, or am I trying to offer them ease and joy and peace? And I've been working on that. And I've been thinking of that song from church, What Do I Have to Fear? When I remember I'm a child of God. And then when I'm thinking of that and I'm looking at them and I'm just observing just so much frustration. And I'm just learning how to understand that their prefrontal cortex isn't fully developed yet. And I just think to myself, if my prefrontal cortex isn't developed, like, how would I communicate? I don't know. I'm just lost. Let's just pray for me, brother.
Well, I experience you as being very found. So in the moment of feeling frustration, what is that like? Where is that happening?
It must be happening intellectually because, or, you know, I'm not quite sure. I think I need to work around that and really observe where it's coming from.
Have you ever observed any of your muscles tensing?
Well, I think moment? I get a headache. Like maybe my brain tenses. So, and my fist.
Yeah, it's honest.
Yeah.
Well, this is good work, and she's probably also not understanding you.
Right.
And yeah. You know, how could they? How could they understand the adult world? It's like mm-hmm. ants trying to understand us, but in a certain way.
Yeah,
I think it's important to just really catch yourself in the moment of feeling the frustration. See if you can take a picture, inward picture of your thought, your sensation of your body and also your emotions. But for me, I can say that my experience hasn't been with so much children, but it's been with dogs, that in the middle of the night, when the dog is misbehaving in an unexpected way and is not understanding me and I'm not understanding it, I have observed my mouth and my jaw get so tense like that. I don't yell at them. I don't say anything. It's the middle of the night. But all that tension is here. And I'm like, I can observe, like, why is this happening? Why am I reacting up here? Where's all that energy coming from? And I can breathe into the jaw and loosen it, you know, and to do that in the moment is very significant work. But I don't know. I think the body has a lot to offer you, all of us. Well, thank you, Brother Joe. We send love to Little Haven and Leo tonight. I see Kristen's hand is up. You there?
Yes.
Hello.
Hi. Just working on conflict this week, or not conflict this week. And I have a rather, it feels like a big conflict in my life. And it has a lot to do with survival, just like financial survival. Or that's the story I tell myself. And the person that this conflict is with hasn't wanted to be in any kind of communication. So I had a choice months ago whether to give up or to step further into the conflict and bring this to like a lawyer. And that seemed to be where I was called, was to step further into the conflict. And it's really against like my nature. I want to run away and hide, and please don't make me go into conflict. So I've just been really noticing, it's interesting because I'm not communicating directly with this person. And yet when I get the email or the phone call from, you know, the mediators, the legal team, I can feel like so many of the same sensations and emotions that I had when I was in like a close relationship with this person. And I thought, wow, isn't that interesting? Look at that. And so I've spent lots and lots of time of just really watching these sensations and disconnecting them from the associations with this other person or with the situation that used to be, and really communicating with my own nervous system and saying that, you know, this is where I am now. I'm safe. And so really starting to watch how the nervous system is regulating differently. Today I noticed that even kind of moving towards my laptop with the thought of I need to respond to this lawyer's email, and just a lot of, and I've been praying for like the energy and the clarity to address this, because I took like a week off from all of it just to like really, actually what I was doing was praying what is highest good. And so as I move towards this email, this action of emailing today, I felt like this huge amount of energy come up. And I thought, oh my God, there's the anxiety. I can't do this now. I can't get through this like this. I'm just, you know, I'm gonna crack up. And then I just stopped. Like it just like that automatic inner stop. And it's like, wait a minute, what is this really? Like, this is just a lot of energy. And haven't I been praying for energy? And haven't I been praying for clarity? And I thought, well, is this really anxiety? Or is this the energy that I've been praying for in order to meet this task? And I could really then just let it be energy and not, there's just no story. And afterwards I went out and thought, okay, I need to like change centers. I've got to get, because even doing the email is still like, there's a lot of energy for the body to handle. And so I went out and went for a walk in nature, and just looking at the trees, it's so beautiful. And found there's a little pond and some geese that I love to look at. And as I was standing there, I just had this very clear, I've had this feeling before, but it was just so much clearer. And it was like, oh, like I am standing in and abiding in this web, this matrix of goodness, like true goodness. And like, I could feel it, like my whole body just woven into this, so that there's like no separation. And I understood from that anything that happens is good. Anything that happens in any situation that I'm in is for highest good. Like it can't change. Anything coming at me, if it doesn't align with that highest good in that way of being, it can't conquer me. And I just heard, and in that too, I just heard like,
Jesus, thank you, Christine.
I am in my Father, and the Father is in me. Thank you. Sorry it was so long.
Thank you. Just wonderful example of how the work comes to meet us in unexpected ways in these situations that come up in life. Very, very good example of how we do our work and that life becomes our teacher. That idea, the work, you know, Maurice Nickel calls them the records, that the phonograph records that get the grooves in them. And as you were talking about the nervous system, you know, like we get these grooves in our brains of what fires together, wires together concept. And so you see someone you haven't seen in 10 years or 5 years, or interact with them again, and all of a sudden it feels like you're that person or nothing's changed. I think that insight that you shared is very, very helpful, and to realize that we're not that person anymore. We can be different, and we can see that in you. You are different. You have navigated this in a different way, a much more skillful way than in the past. Well done. Thank you. Who else would like to share? We have time. Anyone looking for the courage to share? Marta or Thomas, please. Tomas.
Hello, this is Marta. I just wanted to share a little experience that I had. It was right after we had class last week. And it was a particular moment of a lot of stress, and as often happens, comments are made during that high stress situation, and they landed in me. I could feel a lot of I could feel my emotions of guilt and shame, and that uncomfortable feeling of not wanting to feel those things. So that kind of mechanical reaction to want to get those feelings away. And so the first, but at the same time, like I was observing as it was happening, and I could feel justifying eyes, just ready to say, this is not my fault, or this is, I was able to pause before talking. I think just kind of having in mind the mindful speech. And I think it was during that pause that and some breathing just felt a lot of tension in my abdomen. I could feel kind of heat almost. In my mind, the first thing that came was, oh, this is they speaking while stressed. This is them speaking while frustrated, and which really helped me switch from internally considering, which was that was, it's not my fault or shame, to looking at the actual situation and I guess detaching myself from it, that allowed me to then be able to respond more to the situation itself and help relieve the stress. But yeah, that was helpful from last class, so thank you.
Terrific, Marta. Thank you for sharing. That's great work in the moment. So, you know, observing your different centers, that's great work. And I'm so delighted to hear that phrase came to help you. It's such a powerful phrase. This is called, just talk about just quick inner separation. It's just like sharp as a scalpel, just creates inner separation from the stickiness. So well done. Thank you very much for your courage to share tonight. Nice to see you guys. Alan, please.
Well, I'll share this. It was an event many years ago where I was given the privilege of writing a case note explaining an English design patent case. And I submitted my first draft and went in for a review with my editor, who was a third year law student. And one of the first things he said was, he pointed to a sentence and he said, read this sentence as if you hadn't written it. Read it as if you were reading it for the first time and tell me what it says. And so I did, and with those parameters, I couldn't tell him what I had written. And then he said, now read it as if you had written it and tell me what it says. And I said, well, that's easy. It says this and this and this. Two things come to mind. One is, he didn't tell me what I did right or wrong. He gave me room to see it for myself, which became experiential knowledge. And the thing with regard to communication is, putting myself in someone else's shoes, I couldn't explain what Alan had written. So the idea that I got was that in order to communicate an idea, it might be best to start from the other person's first rather than putting me first. Will they understand what I'm saying, not me understanding what I'm saying? So, and I've applied that constantly throughout the years. Anytime I write or say some kind of convoluted idea, I try to see what the other person might think I'm saying first.
Yeah, it's a very practical expression of external considering. Seek first to understand, then to be understood. So if only it were that easy. But I think you're onto something there for all of us, that reading out loud, first of all, writing what we want to say and then reading it out loud, it takes it to another dimension, or at least activates another whole center, at least. And we can see, we can even hear ourselves, even just like before you send the barbed email or make the phone call, write it out, read it to yourself. It brings things outside. It shines the light on it. It's just one extra layer of conscious, you know, involvement in the process of discerning what you want to say. So I think thanks for that example. That's a very practical tool to check ourselves by listening. I constantly am doing that in terms of the weekly emails, you know, reading it out loud before I send it to Marianne, and it's very, very useful. And I catch myself in so many of my mechanicality stuff. So thank you, Alan, for that. We have time for others who wish to share. Please go right ahead and raise your hand. Okay, please. You're muted, Gay.
There, okay. Something I've learned over the last few years, and I think I may have shared this at other times, but it has been so astounding to me. For a long, long, long period of time, there was one thing that I really did not like to do, and that was talk to service people over the telephone, government agency people, people that I needed help from. And inevitably, I would seem to get someone that was not helpful. And there was a lot of frustration on my part and so forth. And I finally realized that how I was holding these people. I was seeing this just as an embodied voice, disembodied voice, that was out to frustrate me. And that was the attitude that I would go into the phone conversation with. And consequently, that was the person I always got, was the person that was not helpful and so forth. So I don't remember why, perhaps it was something we were studying in the work. I decided to try a different tact and hold these people as whoever it was on the other end, as a human being that, you know, maybe, you know, was having a really hard day, obviously had a very boring job talking to people like me. And I would first of all start by acknowledging their name, because they would usually tell me their name. And so I would call them by name, but it was more, I think the change on my end had to do more in the way I was holding them, the way I was treating them, and not even realize I was treating them. I thought I was reacting to their stonewalling or whatever it was they were doing. And I swear, I now get the friendliest, most helpful people on the telephone. I can't help but believe that it is all on my side. There's something in my, must be my tone of voice, something that I consciously changed that allows a flow of communication.
Yeah, you shifted the energy and.
Beg your pardon, what?
You shifted consciousness and you shifted your energy, and so it's drawing a different response.
Well, it is totally amazing, and I really I know that for years I would complain about government employees, about, you know, the rude people I get on the telephone. I don't get them anymore, yeah. And it's magic. Well,
you've done your work on that. It's interesting also for all of us to see how, when we're on a telephone, how different eyes come out. And the justification eyes, to use anger, to raise our voice, and these types of interactions, to use force. It's very interesting to observe eyes that are normally not there in polite conversation, but when you are talking on the phone to someone you'll never see or know, boy, different parts of us can really shine.
Right. I'm glad you brought that up, because that is a huge part of it. I am sure that my tone of voice over the phone with the people before, I would never talk to someone face to face like that. It was like it brought out something in me that allowed that, you know, anger, yeah, frustration, whatever the negative emotion was, the courage to say something with a tone that I wouldn't for the world say if I were talking to him over a counter, for example.
Yeah, so real conscience is developing as we grow in the work. Thank you very much, Gay. Rebecca, I see your hand, but we're gonna move on into the lesson. So I also encourage you, anyone who has never shared before, to just feel free to do so this evening and bring that out into the communication, to communicate in this group. Okay, I'm going to share the screen here and move into the lesson for tonight, which is the subject of three-centered conflict and resolution. So again, we're connecting work ideas with very practical, specific, psychological, relational nature of the work and its ideas to lived experiences such as communication and conflict and loving. So conflict and conflict resolution is shows up all over the place. But in particular, as we get into this notion of conflict, it's good to have access to the idea of the law of three, in addition to self-observing which center you're in. Law of three is represented by this triangle, first force, second force, third force. And I wanted to just show the different images that represent the Enneagram. You put these together and you get the Enneagram symbol, the law of seven, the law of three, and the law of one. And if you're interested in studying more of that, there are plenty of resources out there the Church Glossary or the Journey School archives. But the Law of Three, described by Maurice Nicol in his Commentaries, Volume 1, he says very succinctly, very beautifully, first force can be defined as initiating force, second force as force of resistance, and third force as balancing or relating principle or connecting force or point of application. These three forces are found in nature and in man. Throughout the universe, on every plane, these three forces are at work. They are the creative forces. Nothing is produced without the conjunction of these three forces. Every manifestation, every creation results from the meeting together of these three forces, active, passive, and neutralizing. Now, everything he says from throughout the universe on every plane, these three forces are at work. You need to verify that, or you can aim to verify that. How would anyone know that to be true, for one? But it's definitely a conceptual constating of an idea and a belief system that explains a lot. This is part of the cosmology of the work, this law that exists, that shows up on the planet. So you can verify this for yourself. Is this true? Are these three forces really a part of every aspect of my existence, my life, of every manifestation? I think that Kathy's description of the idea of contrast, which is an extraordinary spiritual principle, to celebrate the contrast and give thanks for the second force that reveals the contrast, what you want, is a very beautiful way of translating the benefit of second force. It reveals the contrast. So for example, today I was driving down B Caves Road, going through a green light, and the car next to me was turning left. They had a yellow arrow, they sped up, and coming on the other way was a large truck going very fast. And guess what happened? You know, that person who sped through the yellow arrow turning left wasn't going fast enough to clear this fast coming oncoming truck. And out of the corner of my eye, I see debris fly, and I hear the smashing of the truck to the back of the truck. Thankfully, no one was hurt, because the big truck oncoming hit the tail end of the empty truck and just spun it around. And so you can see how even in this accident, the law of three is operational from both perspectives of each driver. The driver coming on, going fast, wanted to get through the green light. Second force was this car going slowly, and in this case, third force was actually hitting the car. Another, you know, example of what third force could have been slamming on the brakes. That could have been another example of third force neutralizing fast speed coming forward and the second force of the other car turning into the lane. So it's a very basic law, basic principle, but profound in how it operates in our lives. And especially as it relates to conflict. It's changed my whole perspective on resistance, on people saying no, on people not liking, on people disagreeing, on people rejecting. Every aspect of those no's that have come in my life has been changed to be a part of the creative process of evolution, showing me the contrast of what I really want. You know what? You know, thanks for saying no, because I really don't want that. Anyway, I want something else. The contrast is helping me clarify. And so law of three. And you can also then apply that into the Enneagram, which shows up in our relationships a lot as the Enneagram deals with personalities. That second force comes to us in polar opposites, and particularly those relationships that are opposite our number on the Enneagram. And a lot of friction occurs in those relationships. But again, the law of three is active in that experience or manifestation. Another concept that the work talks about is the idea of the pendulum swinging between yes and no. And this little image of the pendulum is interesting and helpful. I remember Donald Janung in one work class 10 years ago or so, you know, doing a demonstration of the pendulum, and he actually had one, I believe. And what I took away from that and what he said was the farther up you go, the less the swing is in terms of the distance from side to side. So down here, the swing is big, but up at the top, it's much smaller. So as we grow and as we evolve, second force, that swing between resistance and acceptance, between yes and no, our intensity of reactivity lessens. At least that's the wish of growing toward real I and growing deeper into consent of God and being transformed in Christ. So second force is like gravity. It's everywhere. It applies to everything on this planet. So the work says. It opposes, it regulates, it resists, it constricts, it contrasts. The work teaches that second force is crucial in the realm of creative endeavors and in the expression of all that we will and wish for. So how many of you have ever had a wish or a will for something and experienced that second force? And you could call it conflict, that'd be appropriate. Nothing happens without some sort of resistance and conflict. And the conflict tends to contribute to the perfecting of that which you wish to manifest or wish for. I'm so grateful I don't get what I want right away, because it's strengthened my will and has revealed what I really want and shown me the good that I really wish for. All the failure, all the difficulties, all the contrast has shown me what it is that I wish for. And so if you're in a place of this moment of revealing, if you're in a place of resistance, don't despair. It's actually one of the most creative, fruitful moments of your life. It can be very powerful. What gets in the way of kind of this dynamic of second force becoming something more damaging to us, or not being as useful to us as second force should be, is when it devolves to anger in our emotional center. And I can see in my own life that the way second force has manifested for me has oftentimes triggered frustration, anger, irritation, negative emotions, and emotions that deplete and take away the miracle of second force, really, as if I'm pissed off that second force exists. And you know, good luck trying to push the stone wall over. It'll never happen. So you've got to find a different way of moving and navigating around the wall, which is third force. So don't be mad that the wall doesn't move. Be more intelligent about how you relate to the wall and move around it. And this is the long-standing wisdom, not only in the work, but just in the perennial tradition, of how to deal with the negative emotions that end up dunking up what second force is trying to give us, the gift second force is trying to give us. And Seneca lived in the 60s of this common era, died in 64. He was a Roman philosopher. He said that anger is a temporary form of insanity, which I love that phrase. And literally, you know, physiologically, it really is. We drop down into that lower reptilian brain and we go insane sometimes when we give into that anger in response to the second forces of our life. In work terms, anger is a chief way to forget oneself. You literally just drop out a few levels of consciousness. You're totally out of the prefrontal cortex. You're probably somewhere beneath the emotional brain, down near in the reptilian brain, depending on how angry you are, or how much you've given into the power of anger. So when we respond to second force in this way, with anger, we really need to remember ourselves. We need a lot of help in that moment. It's very important to remember ourselves. Otherwise, in that low level of forgetfulness, of mechanicality, of reactivity, we can also do damage that's sometimes irreparable. So, for example, you've seen sports athletes who lose a game, you know, second force, resist, they cannot score the goal and they lose the game. And their response is to be very angry or rip their shirt off or do something violent, throw a chair. I'm sure you've seen this type of behavior around, but it's very negative, and it gets in the way of the possibility of learning from the defeat, learning from the that which resists you, what you want. And it shows you how important is it that you win, you know, how important is that to you? Maybe you need to work out more, maybe you need to practice longer if that's what you really want. So anger and negative emotions in response to second force is one of the best ways to lose the opportunity of the gift in second force. I guess that's the bottom line. And I'll just pause here before we conclude with the resolving conflict and see if anyone has any comments or questions or insights you'd like to add to anything that's been shared so far. Anyone wish to make a comment or a question or insight? Don or Deborah, please.
Hi, it's, sorry.
I can hear you.
Don, yeah, okay. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the fact that, you know, the forces don't stay static necessarily, that they move in a relationship with each other too. So first could become second could be third. Because I never hear much about that. And I was wondering, you know, specifically like even that example you used about the car accident, you know, the brakes could have been second force as well as third force. And I really liked the example that was, when I first heard this, that was how we use the communion. When we go up to communion, the first and second and third force, all of that shifts and changes depending on where you are in the act of taking communion. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea, Don. I mean, the billiard balls kind of just moving around particles, but I mean, it's pretty, I don't know what to say really, other than what's coming up for me right this second is the fact that it's totally relational. So the more relational, the more conscious. That's what Cynthia Bergeau says in her recent book, on non-duality in the corner of Walnut, Fourth and Walnut, that the more relationality, the more consciousness. And so I think that there's a dimension of intelligence that like in our relationships, you can't always be second force and expect to be loved. So you have to have intelligence of shifting and paying attention. And obviously that movement happens because we're not inanimate objects. We're living beings with mind and intelligence and will and emotions. And so because we're moving, sometimes, you know, the law of three then shifts within us. That's been my experience, that the second force, how I relate to second force brings a different third force that I never would have thought of. And all of a sudden I'm experiencing that third force or living it in a new way. I think
As I hear you talking, it reminds me that a couple of nights ago, Deborah and I were getting into a little bit of a difference of opinion. And I was getting into the standard defense posture, where I was not, I could feel it coming and I didn't know, I recognized it, but I didn't know I was recognizing it. So I was just about to continue it's not going to happen. She goes, no, it doesn't matter what you say, Don. You're not going to make me believe what I believe. And I said, however, and as I started to get into it full-fledged, I felt the second force of that defensiveness move into my body. And I got up. I used that energy of the second force to actually move me out of the room and go take care of the situation. And as I did, the whole thing broke open. The third force came in. So that seemed like it was a way of using the second force to become third force, which then moved the first force into second force. It was all beautiful. It was a beautiful movement, and everything got solved.
Thank you for sharing that. And that's a beautiful example. And the Enneagram is a movement, you know, nothing is static. So thank you for bringing that in. And It's just, I think working with second force is an art form. It's a dance. Mm-hmm. And so thank you for that example. And
one other thing too, as you were talking a minute ago, don't try to knock down the brick wall, the cement wall. As you said that, all of a sudden I remembered my mother always talking about when I was like one, you remember the old stroller, the walkers that we used to have, you know, you could, before you started learning to walk, you get put in these walkers and you can kind of wheel yourself around. She said, I used to always go like to get to a doorway and I wouldn't make the door straight on. So I'd hit the side of it. And I would just sit there going, ramming it in, just screaming and screaming until finally someone would come and move me so I could get to the door. And I was like, okay. So the second force then also transfers all the way to now. It can be informative no matter how old you get. And so yeah, that's going to come to me and it's going to really, I think, help me now, you know, all these hundreds of years later. Thank you.
Thank you, Don and Deborah, for your conscious work and modeling for that to us. Stephen, if you can keep it brief, we need to draw the night to a close if you want to make a comment.
Yeah, just this will be brief. Sometimes first force doesn't result in the outcome that you expect. In fact, it may be no World 48 outcome at all. It just comes back as enhanced wisdom, enhanced insight. And you just tuck it away and you move on later and it becomes useful later. So that's why third force can be blind in so many ways. I just wanted to just bring that up.
Yeah, I think that's very helpful. Thank you. Well, I'll share the homework for this coming week. Obviously, this is very practical. I can't imagine anyone who doesn't have some current situation in their life or perception of the world that doesn't involve some level of resistance or second force or you know, borderline conflict. And we can also hold in our hearts the people that are experiencing very, very literal experiences of second force and conflict. And so the invitation for this week's homework for the upcoming week that we'll report on next Thursday is take 5 minutes in the silence and stillness and aim to recall an experience of conflict. So notice to get calm and centered in yourself and then aim to recall an experience of conflict. Can you observe how the conflict was created, how it started? Can you see first and second force in the conflict? Can you observe how the conflict resolved or not? What was the third force? What did you learn about yourself from observing this conflict? So you're observing a conflict that's happened in the past, could have been 10 minutes ago or 10 years ago. And then the invitation again is to watch this YouTube by Sadhguru, who's just a beautiful being I've recently come across. So enjoy that. Thank you all very much for your presence and participation. Marianne.
And thank you, Peter. Thank you. There is a closing word from Rodney Collin that seems to bear on the subject. He says, the greatest happiness we can experience on this earth comes from humility so complete that nothing said to us or about us can make us react either with pleasure or with pain. When we accept whatever comes as an opportunity to learn, as an opportunity for being positive, then we will be truly happy. When that point of humility is reached, there is no longer I want. There is only we are. And this is self-remembering. Self-remembering. Let us join together in praying the prayer of God's infinite love, that God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully. And how blessed I am to simply remember God. Protect us, Lord, while we are awake, and watch over us as we sleep, that awake we may keep watch with Christ, and asleep, rest in Christ's peace. Amen.